This is the Agenda Podcast on the Blood Red Channel, taking a bite-sized look at some of the big Liverpool FC talking points.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the Agenda Podcast on the Blood Red Channel, courtesy of the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host today, Patrick Smith, and I'm alongside the Liverpool Echo's Keith McDonald. Kiefer, how's the international break going?
Surviving, as I just said to you lads then. I mean, yes, I don't think it's anyone's favourite time of the season, isn't it? But I think with the two games being called off for the two Premier League games, prior to it, I think it's, you know, made it that bit more tedious. But, you know, just ticking off the days at the minute, I think we're just under 2 weeks now till Liverpool back in action. So as long as I can survive till then, I'll be all right.
Yeah, it's definitely a tedious period. Make sure you're signed up to all the Blood Red podcasts and the YouTube channel subscribers, of course, all you watchers and listeners. And I'm also joined by my fellow Blood Red producer, Ed Kay. Welcome along, Ed.
All right, lads. It's been a bit boring without any football, hasn't it? Literally just counting down the days until 1st of October in Brighton, honestly.
Yeah, we are counting down the days. We've got a different topic for you today. We've got contract expiries because there's a few faces that may be showing the Anfield exit in the near future, with their Liverpool careers remaining uncertain. So let's work through chronologically. We're going to look at 2023 and then 2024. Let's start with 2023 first. Kiefer, I'm going to come to you first as well. The headline of these names is probably Roberto Firmino. His contract's going to expire at the end of this season. He's had a typically inconsistent to quite extreme lengths at the start of the season, but do you think he's shown enough to merit an extension?
Probably not. I think this will probably be the last year we'll see probably Firmino at Liverpool. I think it was quite telling that, you know, towards the back end of last year, obviously with Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah's, you know, contracts at the time expiring at the same time as Firmino's, which obviously would have been next summer. But, you know, there didn't seem to be much talk around, you know, Firmino potentially getting an extension. Obviously, we know he suffered with injuries last year and obviously, you know, didn't play to his best form. But I think, you know, what is he now? I think he's just gone 30, isn't he? So, you know, I think everyone's kind of realised that his best days are probably behind him, you know, which is no slight on him. Obviously, you know, it happens with age. And, you know, we've seen, you know, with the addition of Darwin Nunez now, the kind of direction that Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp maybe want to take this team in. And you know, I think a big observation in recent years, you know, I think a common observation as well has been that, you know, that not the one thing he's good for, but obviously the kind of difference that, you know, Firmino makes in terms of pressing and maybe his output off the ball, you know, I don't think that's, you know, I think that's maybe taken its toll over the last, you know, 7 years or whatever he's been at Liverpool now. It's, you know, it's been a long time. And I think he's, you know, played the most games under any player under Jurgen Klopp in kind of any of his club, which, you know, tells you kind of everything. Of, you know, he's been, you know, such a dependable figure. But I just think Liverpool may be moving away from that now. And, you know, we have seen at times this season and even towards the back end of last season when Liverpool have been chasing games that, you know, they do throw Firmino on in, you know, 4-2-3-1. And, you know, he does look better, you know, I think sitting off the striker, but I think, you know, maybe long-term, I think we maybe all thought there'd be a 4-2-3-1 this season, but, you know, it seems that Klopp's kind of stuck with that 4-3-3. And obviously Darwin Nunez is seemingly, you know, long-term, you'd hope, is going to be the man to kind of lead that new kind of revelation and that new era. And then, you know, either side of him, you've got, you know, Luis Diaz and you've got Jota, who can also play down the middle, you know, and there's, you know, some bright prospects coming through the academy. So I think it's pretty telling now that, you know, similar to the Junior Wijnaldum situation, you know, if you go back, you know, further, that once you get in the last 12 months of your contract and you think as well that clubs outside of, you know, the Premier League can, you know, start negotiating a deal from the 1st of January and, you know, we're approaching the end of September. I think the fact that nothing has, you know, been kind of signaled yet is probably tells you at the writings of the wall and that, you know, he'll probably, you know, play a bit part role this season, as we've seen at times. You know, he has been impressive. You know, the game against Bournemouth, you know, he's been brilliant. But I think, like I say, I think Liverpool are heading into that new era and hopefully, you know, he'll get the send-off he deserves kind of at the end of the season. You know, something that we didn't see with Sadio Mane last year. Obviously, it was all kind of, you know, tight-knit, wasn't it? So, you know, I think as long as, you know, he kind of gets that send-off that, you know, he has warranted, I don't think there'll be, you know, any bad feelings from either side. I think, you know, he might want to try something new. Obviously, those reports in the summer wasn't there about Juventus potentially being interested in him, you know. So, you know, it's similar to kind of Sadio Mane in that aspect that, you know, maybe he wants that kind of last big payday in Europe before, you know, he maybe tries something else in a couple of years. So I think, you know, by the time we do hit next May, I probably would expect Firmino to kind of, you know, leave Liverpool. But, you know, as you say, what a servant he has been over the last 7 years. He's, you know, he's been the face of Jurgen Klopp's, you know, trophy lad in years. And it's been such a successful period for the club. You know, one of, if not the best sides that we've ever seen. So, you know, like I say, just certainly no hard feelings with him kind of walking out the door. He can certainly have his head held high.
Yeah, South American players do tend to be lured by clubs on the continent. It seems to be a sort of tradition with them. But Ed, what's your take on this? Because, you know, some could be fearful of losing such like unique skill set in the Klopp idyllic false nine position. As Keith mentioned, though, Darwin Nunez showing we don't really need a false nine anymore.
It's an interesting one, really, isn't it? I think it all does come down to a lot. I think a lot of people were expecting to see this 4-2-3-1 formation at the start of the year. And if we were going to play that formation, I think you'd probably be expecting Firmino to sort of fit in that number 10 role. But obviously, I mean, with Nunez getting that red card, we've sort of feels like we've missed the opportunity to sort of settle into that 4-2-3-1 with him up top. And obviously, Firmino's not really had the chance to play in that number 10 role. He played a few good games while Nunez was out, and arguably kept Nunez out the side, didn't he? Apart from, obviously, the red card. But I do just think that role, that number 10 role, would maybe have suited him. And with us having stuck with the 4-3-3, you've seen him sort of dropping deep. It looked like he was playing, you know, central defensive midfield at times this season. And it's sort of hindered us a bit. You know, it's sent Salah and Diaz wide. And when they're so wide and Firmino's not through the middle, it does just look like we're missing that goal threat. So I do think it's probably about time we moved on. I do agree with everything Keith has said there about maybe it is time to sort of, you know, let him go on a free, let him try and get that one big payday before he's done. I think he's definitely earned the right for Liverpool to sort of pat him on the back and say, you know, on your way, or sort of go find that money. But it will be sad to see him go. Obviously, we've seen the breakup of that original front three with Mane having left already. I think it's something we're all going to have to come to terms with. It is going to be happening. Obviously, we've got Salah for a few more years. And I think if you could have picked one of the three to stay beyond this summer and the next, I think it would have been Salah if you'd have asked most people. So, yeah, it'll be sad to see him go. But at the end of the day, he's been an absolutely fantastic servant for the club. And I think he has deserved that sort of chance to go on a free and get that payday somewhere else.
Do you think it'd be the right move for his career, Ed?
I'm not sure. I think in terms of his career, look, he's never going to find the player he is now. He's never going to find a situation as perfect for him that as these last 7 years I've been at Liverpool. Was it 2015 he joined? He has been the perfect system player. At times, you know, voices from outside might have been criticising him for not getting the goals. You know, he went however long without scoring at Anfield. But anyone who watches Liverpool week in, week out knows how important he has been to that team, to the system. He's been, you know, never been the best player in the team, but has been often, I think, the most important for the way Liverpool play. So in terms of him going elsewhere and finding somewhere that's as good of a fit for him as Liverpool, I'm not sure he will, but in terms of his footballing career, I'm not sure that is the right decision. But in terms of, you know, family life, him earning that extra bit of money, I do think it is probably the right move for him to go and try and earn that money elsewhere, because he's not going to be getting another bumper contract at Liverpool, really.
Yeah, Juve are going to pay Aaron Ramsey $450k a week. Let's see what Firmino can get there, potentially. Now, viewers and listeners, get your keyboards at the ready, because it's everyone's favourite topic of the midfield. And there's three midfielders with contracts expiring at the end of the season in a somewhat already depleted area of the pitch. We've got three players set to expire. Kiefer, Naby Keita, discuss.
Surprisingly, I think he will get an extension. If I was to bet on it, I think he would. And I don't think that's purely down to, you know, maybe on merit, but I think it's purely down to kind of Liverpool and a business aspect. I think obviously everyone knows the outlay that Liverpool, you know, initially spent on him, what, in 2017. Now at the time, he obviously was the record signing, you know, $54 million initially. And but I just think from a business point of view, like, you know, I think to let him go next summer, I just don't think it makes much sense. You know, yes, he hasn't kind of hit those heights, but I know he didn't play as much as he would have liked to last season, but he was fit. And obviously that comes from not playing and not picking up stupid injuries. But, you know, I think obviously it's a disappointing period at the minute for him, because, you know, like you say, it's been such a barren spell in midfield with so many injuries. And if he kind of had that prolonged stay in the team, I think, you know, that could have maybe, you know, helped his case. But I just think if you look at how much Liverpool spent on him, and I think there would be a few suitors in European football. I mean, I think he's only, what, 26, 27. So his peak is technically ahead of him. I think for a player you could easily get at least 20 million for, I think you'd have plenty of suitors for even 25 million, something around that figure. I think to let him go on a free, it just wouldn't make much sense. I mean, even if you tied him down to a contract, you know, in the next couple of months, and then departed in a year or, you know, in the summer or whatever. I'm not saying that is going to happen, but just logically, you know, it doesn't mean if he signs a contract in November, it doesn't mean that he's going to be here, in, you know, this time next year kind of thing. It's obviously we all know how football works and how kind of ruthless it is as a business. And obviously Liverpool, you know, I know obviously Michael Edwards is obviously not here anymore, but, you know, how kind of ruthless they are in the window in terms of incomings and outgoings, you know, in terms of getting the desired fees. And a lot of the time, you know, they do get that money that, you know, people from the outside would look at and think, you know, how have they managed that figure, or, you know, how have they kind of, you know, persuaded clubs, whether it be, you know, loaded with add-ons or it just be, you know, by looking at the market and seeing who's gone elsewhere kind of thing. I mean, you know, you only have to look at Julian Ward and the money he kind of got for Neco Williams this summer and, you know, compared it to Dej Spence, who was at Forest, and obviously Borough, and he went to Tottenham, didn't he? So, you know, Liverpool are kind of well looking at the market and they'll know exactly what they think Keita's worth. And obviously that is going to be more than a free, you know, next summer. So, yeah, I think, you know, to tie him down to a new contract, regardless of what people think and what people, you know, may say about his Liverpool career over the past 4 years, I think, you know, tying him down to a new contract would be a short-term priority for me because, you know, like I say, it's especially, you know, we know that, you know, Liverpool might not get the backing from their owners that a lot of the other clubs, you know, a lot of the traditional big six would have. So, you know, in terms of, you know, when revenue is, you know, so scarce, you know, it, and you're kind of generating it yourself, I think, you know, little kind of tips and tricks like that is only going to help, you know, Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp kind of, you know, be able to bring someone else in that department. But I still think he's, you know, it's weird because whenever someone asks me about Keita, I still couldn't tell you, like, obviously we know he's a good player, but I couldn't tell you what he's good at, if that makes sense. Like, he's such an anomaly, isn't he? Like, I don't think there's ever been a player who's divided a fan base. I mean, if you spoke to 100 people, 50 would tell you that he's the best player in the world, or 50 would tell you he's the worst player in the world. There's just no kind of rational opinion on Keita. And, you know, obviously we do know he's a good player and he's got the backing of his manager, and you only have to look at the clubs who were lining up for him after his time in Germany. But I think the reality of the situation is that he's playing in a completely different system to the one that he was at Leipzig, or, you know, all those years ago. I mean, you know, the settlement from the Premier League, you know, it's the settling in period. You only have to look at, you know, Timo Werner and how he struggled. Obviously, he was part of that. You know, they had a great relationship at Leipzig, and obviously he's obviously returned now, obviously having not cracked it in the Prem. You know, whether that be the same for Keita, who knows? But we've seen glimpses of it, and we've seen moments, and you know, they have been few and far between at times. But I think, you know, you can only, you know, April, for instance, the semi-final against Man City in the FA Cup, it was, you know, Thiago, Fabinho, Keita, and, you know, they blew, you know, arguably the best side in the world. They blew them away within half an hour, didn't they? You know, the three goals that are good. You know, it was everything kind of you expected from Keita, you know, kind of encapsulated into like a 45-minute, you know, cameo kind of thing. He was brilliant. You know, his pressing was great. His carrying with the ball was great. His passing was great. But it's just kind of been seeing that on a consistent basis. And I think, you know, obviously when everyone is fit, you know, Liverpool do have a lot of options. And obviously, you know, now with the likes of, you know, Harvey Elliott, you know, Fabio Carvalho, and even Curtis Jones, who's another one who's still yet to maybe prove himself. I think obviously Keita, maybe just due to fitness and maybe other reasons of, you know, not taking that chance, he just finds himself kind of slipping down the pecking order. And it is just, you know, like I say now, if there was one time that, you know, you want him to stay fit out of the last 4 years, it would have been, you know, this time now. You know, it's the busiest season in Premier League history in terms of, you know, fixture congestion, and, you know, obviously Liverpool's injuries haven't helped. Obviously, you know, we had to sign off on deadline day, and obviously, you know, Keita obviously wasn't able to kind of take that chance. Obviously, was he, you know, he's had this hamstring injury, and, you know, obviously not in the Champions League squad either, is he? And, you know, seems to be kind of different noises around how serious this injury is. Obviously, he was called up to the Guinea squad last week. Obviously, he has been sent home, but, you know, the fact that he was even called up to the squad in the first place would kind of ring alarm bells as to, you know, if Liverpool said it's this serious and kind of there's a dispute about that. But, you know, you just hope that he is able to find some, you know, rhythm and some form and kind of get those opportunities and kind of grasp them. Because, like I say, you know, when he is on his day, you know, and like I say, that might be few and far between, but, you know, there is a good midfielder in there. Like I say, we have seen glimpses of it. It's just a case of getting a kind of a steady beat out of him and just a steady rhythm. And you know, because I think if you had a midfield of, you know, him, Thiago and Fabinho, I think on paper that is, you know, does complement each other, you know, really well. If you look at kind of the age profiles and kind of the attributes and everything. So, yeah, it is a difficult one. But I would hope that he does sign a new contract purely from a business point of view.
The Agenda on the Blood Red Channel.
I mean, it's one of them ones, you know, if you look from the outside, in my opinion, it looks like Naby wants to leave. Perhaps the club could get that sort of gentleman's agreement. Look, we'll give you a new contract. We'll still let you leave. But whether Naby will risk that or not, I mean, Ed, would you give him another shot with a new contract, or do you think his time is up and Naby will want his time to be up as well?
I am going to prove Kiefer's point here about him dividing the fan base, because I'm done with him. After that last injury, I just, you know, I actually really, in the glimpses we have seen, I really like him as a player, but he's just never fit, is he? It's gotten to the point where, if we can get a replacement in, obviously, but it's gotten to the point where he's not really worth his place in the Premier League squad, is he? Because he's never available. Like, he's got to be one of the least reliable players I can remember us having. And while, like I say, I do like the player, it's just it's not worth having him on the books, paying him the wage as if he's going to be available, you know, for 15 games a season. It's looking like, I mean, we've had our fair share of injury prone players recently, but you know, Joel Matip put together a season and he looked like the most injury prone player we'd had before Keita. But even he's managed to put together like a season last season where barely got injured at all. But Naby Keita, he does not seem to be able to put five games together. And for me, I think it's just time to move on. Obviously, there is something to be said for signing him up to a new contract and being able to recoup some of that money. But for me, I think if you look at the recruitment Liverpool have done in this Klopp era, he's probably one of, if not the only flop, really. You can't think of too many. And I do think there is something to be said for Liverpool looking at that and thinking, you know what, in the past we've got 17 million for Jordan Ibe, 17 million for Dom Solanke. Maybe on this one, we just take the loss, you know, cut our losses for once. What was it? We spent 50 odd million on him. We spent however much on wages, however much more on wages it would take if we gave him a new contract before we find somewhere to offload him. So for me, I think he would be one of the players I would be willing to let go on a free.
Yeah, I'd be luring him as a sweetener for a potential Jude Bellingham deal. Get him straight on that. I'll stick with you, Ed, though, because there's also two more midfielders expiring, as I said. We've got Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who at the end of the season will be turning 30. Yes, 30. Don't know how that's happened. And 37-year-old, well, James Milner, he's currently 36. He will turn 37. Remarkable condition he's in, to be fair to him. But do either of those have any hopes of an extension, do you think?
Well, I might get pelters in the comments now because I'm going to argue for James Milner getting another year. Look, nobody has been overly impressed with James Milner this season when he started games, but I don't think anybody thinks that's the role he's here to play. Like, you know, he should be coming on in the last 10 minutes and he should be slotting away a penalty every now and again, and that should be just about it. And I think for that role, he's still fit for purpose. He's not done anything to show me that he can't still perform that role. You know, he's still fit as a fiddle. He does look a bit slower. I wouldn't be bringing him on at right back particularly anymore. You know, I think if we're wanting to bring Trent off, it's going to have to be Gomez or hopefully Ramsey when he's fit. But I do think there's still a role to be played for James Milner, you know, coming on in that central midfield place, you know, playing in the League Cup, however that looks after they mess around with it, whatever the conversations are having today. Playing in the League Cup, in the FA Cup. I think there's more than enough reasons to give Milner, you know, another year before you let him go and retire at Leeds and whatnot. Oxlade-Chamberlain, I don't think you'll find many people who are going to argue that he needs another year. I think it is time to move on from him. You know, he threatened to be a good Liverpool player until he got that injury. Was it Roma? It was against
Roma. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was in the cop for that one. And you knew it was bad when he went down. You could sort of hear everyone around him sort of go, ooh. And, you know, ever since then, another player who's probably not put five games together since then. So, but I mean, we'll always remember that goal against City, won't we? But yeah, I think it is time to move on from Oxlade-Chamberlain. But for me, Milner, I think you could give him another year.
I mean, Keith, what's your take on this one? Does Milner merit another extension, do you think? And is the Ox definitely on his way out?
I agree exactly with what Ed says in regards to Milner. I think, you know, before the start of the season, you know, before the signing of Arthur, he's probably, what, seventh choice midfielder, which I think everyone, you know, given the experience and kind of, you know, all the talk that, you know, everyone's kind of said since his time at Liverpool, you know, over the past 7 years, and, you know, you only have to listen to his peers and the younger players and kind of how much he helps that dressing room. I think, you know, as a seventh choice midfielder, you know, he's not a bad player at the end of the day. You know, if you do need those final 10, 15 minutes, you know, if it's a tight game or whatever, or, you know, you're holding on for a win, but I think obviously unfair. I felt sorry for him kind of in the past kind of month or so when he has been, you know, pulled between pillar and post kind of thing, because as Ed says, that's clearly not the role that he signed up for in the summer when he signed his new contract. And, you know, as a 36-year-old midfielder who's won it all, and, you know, he maybe has a possibility of going into coaching, I think it depends exactly what he wants to do. I mean, if he wants to go and play, you know, he strikes me as someone who'd play until he's 40 if he can. So obviously that changes the landscape, doesn't it? I mean, if he wants to, if he says, look, because there would have been conversations in the summer, right, when he signed the contract, so it would have been, he wants a one-year deal, and I'm sure he would have made Liverpool aware of what his intentions were playing-wise. You know, I'm going to give it a year and then, you know, I'm going to listen to my body or whatever, or I'm going to give it a year and then, you know, I might, you know, start doing my badges or, you know, join the coaching setup. You know, we've heard murmurs about that in recent years. So I think, you know, considering Liverpool have had him for 7 years, I think it'll be an awful shame if he does have intentions to go into coaching. I think it'd be a great shame to lose him. So, you know, if he says at the end of this season, I'd like another year and then I'm going to retire, if I'm Liverpool, I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to lose his qualities to, you know, a Leeds or, you know, a newly promoted side or whoever. So I'm thinking, right, well, I'll just give him another deal, you know, another reduced wage packet and whatever. And then so you can kind of keep him around. And then, because like I say, in terms of someone who's won it all and it even has that kind of effect, I mean, you listen to Jordan Henderson, who's what, you know, 32 years old, and he still seems to be learning from James Milner, which isn't a slide on Jordan Henderson, but it's just, you know, kind of the aura of James Milner and kind of the standard setter that he is. And I mean, you know, has he lost a lactic test yet? Yes, he's been here. I think he wins it every summer, doesn't he?
Don't think so.
You know, that just tells you kind of everything about his application as a professional. And I know Klopp referenced him in Napoli, you know, as a few late tackles and kind of how he struggled. But again, as Ed says, no one would have expected him to be starting Liverpool's first Champions League away game of the season. So just obviously huge context to kind of, you know, his recent below par outings. I actually thought at Fulham, I thought he was Liverpool's probably best player, you know, on the opening day of the season, which shows that he can still, you know, perform at those kind of, you know, lower league, Premier League level games. But so I think obviously with that one, it obviously is probably maybe up to him and where his intentions lie. So I'm sure we'll kind of find that out as it obviously the season progresses. But in terms of Oxlade-Chamberlain, I mean, again, same as, you know, what Ed said, I think he covered it quite well in terms of, you know, he promised to be such a great Liverpool player and kind of burst onto the scene, didn't he? To use the Mika Richards phrase, didn't he? When Coutinho left and you know, he kind of really provided those goals from midfields that Liverpool, you know, had in that kind of Coutinho's last 6 months. And obviously got that devastating injury against Roma when he really starts to kind of get into his A game, and he formed a good relationship with Salah, didn't he? And you know, we have seen glimpses since. I think, you know, I think the 19-20 season, you know, I think he was Liverpool's, he had the most goal contributions from midfield for Liverpool and put together a decent run in the side at that time. But, you know, again, I think he got a knee injury that pre-season, and then he's just not been able to kick on. I mean, it felt like a do or die season for him, with the pre-season just happened, and obviously then he gets that hamstring injury in on the pre-season tour, doesn't he, in Thailand, and that kind of, I think that, you know, given the extent of that injury, which, you know, was rumoured to be about 3 months, which, you know, has put him out of the Champions League squad, I think that was, you know, all but the nail in the coffin. I mean, it would take an almighty, you know, effort in the second half of the season, I think, to kind of persuade, you know, to persuade everyone that he kind of does merit a new contract. And, you know, as you said, Patrick, on the intro, you know, he's 30 years old now. I think everyone kind of still has this image of him that he is, you know, a 26-year-old who, you know, can maybe, you know, put together a run of games. But the reality is that he's aged and, you know, not for the better. Obviously, his body's not been able to take that toll. And you know, it just feels like it's setback after setback at the minute. So, you know, I think he's another one. I think he'll have the well wishes of everyone if he, you know, when he, you know, potentially departs, you know, next summer. I'm sure it'll be similar to Divock Origi in that kind of sense. You know, maybe not the cult hero status in years to come, but I think, you know, he'll get a kind of a good reception from everyone around downfield. And I think, again, you know, he's another one who you only have to listen to kind of the players and the younger players in terms of the standard that he sets at, you know, at the Exeter Training Centre and at Anfield kind of week in, week out, and kind of the energy and the positivity that he brings to the camp, and people can maybe take the mick out of that and whatever, but I think that is, you know, such an important balance that you do need in a side. And he's, you know, wise, I think he'd have ambitions to maybe play, you know, every single week, and obviously he hasn't done that in recent years. I don't think he'd be one who'd be walking around sulking and kind of bringing the mood down, which again is, you know, really, I think really important and probably goes unnoticed. But yeah, I really, really can't see, you know, especially given the emergence of Harvey Elliott over the last 2 years and obviously Fabio Cavalli has joined the club. Obviously, it remains to be seen kind of where he plays long term. But, you know, all these kind of feel like they're pushing pushing, you know, the likes of Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain down the pecking order. And then, of course, you've got a certain, you know, English midfielder linked with a move to Anfield next summer. And, you know that you do need to kind of free up, you know, bodies in midfield for if he is to come to Liverpool, or, you know, if someone else is to come, because we know, you know, 2023 is kind of being billed as this big year of kind of midfield redevelopment. And, you know, in order to do that, you do need to let some people go, as hard as that may be and as difficult as their decisions may be. But yeah, like I say, I'm sure he'll get a good reception, you know, over the course of the next 7-8 months. And ultimately, if he does, like I say, walk out the door on a free next year, I think he'll have everyone's well wishes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel so bad for Oxlade-Chamberlain. The talent was there. We'll all remember that goal against City, but I don't think his legs have got many more years left in him. I could predict an early retirement on that one. But just on Milner, though, as well, I can imagine him moving into sort of hybrid player coach role. I think that was what he's meant to be doing this season, but he's just sort of thrown in due to injuries, and his form kept him in the side. But he's not only important as that character in the dressing room, I think the physical standards he sets, you know, winning the lactate test, he's in incredible condition for a 36-year-old turning 37. You know, that benchmark is what you need in the Jurgen Klopp side, that the identity of midfield is meant to be physicality, pace, you know, pressing. And I think Milner exemplifies that. But also at the end of the season, we've got Adrian expiring, so it's likely he'll leave probably. I mean, we thought he would last season, but he signed a one-year extension. Who knows what happened with him? And of course, Artur could return to Juve. So we won't worry about those two for now. But let's move swiftly on to 2024. It's something that seems quite far away, but probably approach sooner than we think. Ed, let's come to you first. They're both quite big, but let's start with Thiago Alcantara. He'll be turning 33 in 2024. So perhaps the twilight of his career at that stage. But he's someone who's just so classy. You know, he's got that regista style. He could play well on into his 30s, couldn't he?
Yeah, I spoke at length about Thiago with Matt the other day, because it was 2 years since he joined the other day, and we did an agenda all on him. But I think he's probably, him and the next one we're going to discuss, are probably the two that I would nailed on, say, you know, get him signed up for another year now. Because Thiago, you look at his style of play, he's never going to drop off a cliff one season out of nowhere. You know, it's not going to suddenly start playing terribly. He is going to be the sort of player that sort of fades into the sunset, you know, like a Luka Modric or a Toni Kroos. And I think if we can tie him down and have him in our midfield for as long as he wants to be there and as long as Jurgen Klopp wants him there, then I think that's the best thing for everybody involved. I mean, you notice the difference in how we play with or without him. I mean, that Ajax game, anybody who watches that and compares it to the Napoli game before, it's chalk and cheese. Whenever he comes in, it was such a better side, and I really don't think you can't replace him. I mean, you know, if we're getting rid of a Naby Keita and an Oxlade-Chamberlain, then you can bring in sort of younger players who might be able to play a role, but there's nobody out there that you can bring in that's going to be able to do what Thiago does. I mean, I can't think of a player in world football who is as good at what he does, but, and let alone one Liverpool could tempt, but it just bothers me that we didn't get him earlier, if I'm being completely honest. I wish we had a 26-year-old Thiago in our midfield, but having said that, I'd still be signing him up for years to come. And I think that one's a no-brainer for everyone at Liverpool, to be honest.
The Agenda on the Blood Red Channel.
Keith, I presume it's safe to say you're similarly aligned. If it was up to me, I'd give him a 20-year contract. I'd happily watch him ping it about when he's 50s for Liverpool.
No, I'm just glad Ed said that what I've been thinking for years. I mean, I would do horrendous things to have a 26-year-old Thiago Alcantara lining up in Liverpool's midfield. I mean, he is just, as Ed said, he's just the complete midfielder. And, you know, as he alluded to, he's not going to drop off a cliff. You know, he's not someone who, you know, I know he does like a tackle and that kind of thing, but he's not someone who... he's of that kind of Spanish mold, isn't he? The Xavi's, the Iniesta's, you know, the Xavi Alonso's, the Sergio Busquets. He's not someone who demands too much from his body. I mean, that's ironic, isn't it, given that he, you know, does suffer those injuries. But I think the fact that he's able to still be at the top level after, you know, 10, 12 years, and he has suffered, you know, a huge amount of injuries, you'd say. You know, he's not someone who's, you know, if you look at Jordan Henderson, I think the drop-off, you know, in the last couple of seasons has been noticeable, because obviously a huge side of his game has obviously been his endurance and his kind of ability to press and get in the face of the opponents. But, you know, while Thiago is good at that and he's, you know, almost like a tempo setter, I don't think that's not the key to his game. Obviously, we know how good he is with the ball, and, you know, he's... He, I mean, he's 32 now, is he? 31 or whatever, and he's just so press resistant, isn't he? I mean, like I said, that Ajax game, it just, you know, people swarming around him and he's just dropping shoulders left and right. I mean, there was that one in the first half where the crossfield ball comes and he just lets it run through his legs. I mean, he doesn't even have to think about that. But to everyone else watching, it's just like how, you know, in that split second, how do you just, you know, first of all, see the ball come in and first of all, see, you know, Tsimikas, I think it was, you know, running onto it. But he's another one, I think, as well. You know, there's a theme here, isn't there? I mean, you know, you can kind of put him in that category of like Henderson, Milner, of like those kind of bench setters. And, you know, he's only been at Liverpool for 2 years, but I think as well, he's another one who's, you know, from what you kind of hear and what you read and what people tell you, he's had a massive impact on that dressing room. And, you know, kind of, he's a huge character, isn't he? And, you know, I can only imagine as like a, you know, Harvey Elliott. I mean, I spoke to James Balaghese the other day, who's on loan at Crawley Town, and he was just, you know, saying about having watched him, you know, at Bayern Munich as a kind of a teenager growing up. And he said just to kind of play with him in training and kind of just learn from him, even when you're not, you know, playing against him or playing with him, just to watch him. He said it's just kind of, you're just in awe of him. And he said that's the first player he's ever been, you know, kind of starstruck by, which I think tells you kind of the stature of the player. I mean, I think, you know, Liverpool obviously just won the Premier League, won the Santiago, did won the Champions League the year before. And I think even then, people were like, we've just signed Thiago Alcantara. I think there was a pinch, you know, kind of pinch yourself moment, given the kind of stature he has been in kind of European football over the years. But yeah, I would certainly be tying him down to a new contract. I mean, even if it's only, you know, a 2 years and then 2 years or however you kind of want to play it. I mean, you know, Sergio Busquets is still playing at the age of, what, 34? I mean, I know he hasn't been seen since that night at Anfield all those years ago, but, you know, I think he's a prime example like that, if you know what I mean, that, you know, he can kind of let his football do the talking as opposed to kind of, like I said, his kind of off the ball presence. And I think, you know, if you can kind of get the right kind of youthful injection around him, you know, we've seen with the likes of Harvey Elliott and, you know, whether his position on the right is obviously a long-term thing, but, you know, even, you know, Curtis Jones, Fabio Carvalho, and like I said, a certain English midfielder that has been heavily linked with a move to Liverpool, if you kind of get them in and around him, there's no reason why Thiago would, you know, need to put up the kind of astronomical kind of running figures that, you know, this Liverpool side kind of demands of itself. You know, just, you know, we saw it with Gerrard in kind of 13-14, didn't we, that Henderson and, you know, Joe Allen and all the kind of people were doing Gerrard's running for him. You know, he kind of sat at the bottom of the 4-1-2-1-2, didn't he? And, you know, that was, you know, one of his best years at Liverpool kind of in terms of his later career. So I think there's certainly an adaptation that he might have to take, but I don't think that would, you know, I don't think that will put anyone off tying him down to a new contract. And it seems that he loves the place. He seems like he loves Liverpool, you know, when he speaks about the place. So, you know, as long as he's happy, you know, I don't see there'll be any reason, you know, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't, unless he wanted to play in the MLS, I don't see any reason why he'd wouldn't retire at Liverpool unless it got to the kind of the James Milner stage, because, you know, I know his body's obviously taking its toll, but he looks like he could play, you know, for the next 5 years or so. He's just absolutely world-class, isn't he? As Ed says, probably the best in the world at what he does. And I don't think there's anyone else who could probably bring that to this Liverpool side.
Yeah, world-class. And his play style, to me, means that he can go on till he's probably nearly 40. Wouldn't surprise me. Well, last but by no means least on today's agenda, we've got the contract of Joel Matip. Like Thiago, he'll turn 33 at the end of his contract in 2024. Ed, is he one you'd be looking to keep beyond then?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's Liverpool's second best centre-back, isn't he? I mean, whether it looked for a point last season like Konaté was coming for that position, but it would have been interesting had Konaté not been injured before the start of the season to see who would have been his starting two. But obviously it is now Matip and Van Dijk again. Gomez has come in and done quite a good job. I think he's obviously still there as a backup. He got a new contract fairly recently, didn't he? So he'll be there for some time. And I do think it's important to tie Joel Matip down as well. Van Dijk is Van Dijk, but I don't know many centre-backs who can do that thing Joel Matip does, where he strides out sort of 30, 40 yards and somehow doesn't lose the ball and plays a pretty good pass into one of the forward players. And every time you see him do it, you're sort of waiting for him to lose the ball and he doesn't. So that sort of quality, I don't think you can sort of easily be discarding that. Obviously, like I say, Gomez will be around. He's a lot younger, same as Konaté, but I would be keeping Joel Matip around. Even if he does sort of drop off over the next couple of years, I think he'd be a good third, fourth option if Gomez and Konaté can step up and fill that for sort of second and third option behind Van Dijk. And I just think the partnership that he has built up with Van Dijk, you know, another thing that you don't want to so easily discard. I think that they'll both be well able to play together for the next few years and continue that partnership. So yeah, I think Matip's another one where I definitely would be looking to tie him down for a few more years and keep him at the heart of that defence alongside Van Dijk until, you know, Konaté is ready to really step into the role and become that definitive second-choice centre-back.
I mean, Kiefer, how important is Joel Matip to Liverpool? Do you think he'll still have that strong starting position in 2 years' time? You know, Konaté was very much pushing it last year. Joe Gomez with this newly extended contract, as Ed mentioned. Do you think Matip, when he's 33 in 2024, will still have that strong position?
I mean, you'd probably say no, obviously, just kind of given Konaté's, you know, first season and obviously given that, you know, he did start the Champions League final, which I think, you know, I think his performance obviously gets lost kind of, you know, obviously, and everything that kind of happened that night, and obviously Liverpool not winning, I think, you know, he was absolutely brilliant. You know, you know the way he handled, you know, Vinicius Junior and Benzema that night was, you know, as well as he could have, really. And obviously the goal, you know, comes, you know, not on his side, but obviously, you know, through kind of Trent Alexander-Arnold. But, you know, I think long term, I think, you know, everyone was maybe, I mean, there was a tweet, wasn't there, last year, or I think the club put something out, and it was like Van Dijk saying that, like, Konaté and Gomez were the future, and I think everyone kind of, you know, has seen that. You know, obviously it's been a kind of a weird 12 months or so for Gomez, but obviously kind of he's committed his future now, hasn't he? There were some tentative links with him moving away. But I think long term you'd probably say, obviously, you know, Gomez and Konaté would probably be the two. But again, Van Dijk's one of those, considering he's had that, you know, that knee injury, 2 years ago. Obviously came back last year and played all those games, I think far more than anyone would have imagined. He's another one who shows no signs of slowing down. So obviously, again, it's still that one position which is up for grabs. But I think if you have a pool of, you know, Matip, Gomez and Konaté, again, you've got three very different centre-backs there. You've got, obviously, Konaté, who's almost like, obviously, he's similar to Gomez more than he is Matip, but obviously doesn't have the kind of on-the-ball presence that Matip had. And obviously, like Ed says, you know, there's not many centre-backs that can do that in world football, you know, which is, you know, such a key thing for Liverpool at times. Obviously, Van Dijk has that traditional trademark switch, doesn't he? But, you know, Matip is kind of, you know, bringing the ball out and progressing Liverpool up the field when maybe, you know, they're playing a low block side and it, you know, it does have, you know, we saw the goal at Anfield against Leeds last year, which was, you know, I think everyone's probably favourite goal of the season, kind of given who scored it and given how good of a goal it was. But, you know, that's just kind of the quality that he can offer. And I think as well, you know, it feels like with Gomez and Matip, certainly prior to Konaté's days at Anfield, that they were never fit at the same time. So it was always one was profiting off the other's injury and kind of vice versa, which obviously isn't, you know, a nice situation to have. But I think given that they're not exactly the most, obviously I know Matip was, you know, more or less around for the whole season last year, but, you know, history will tell you that him and Gomez aren't the most durable centre-backs. So to kind of have a pool of those four with an ageing Van Dijk, who's, you know, I don't think he's showed any signs of slowing down this season, but maybe hasn't hit the kind of the peak that, you know, that we saw last year so frequently. I think it's a good mix. I think, like I say, you've got everything there. You've got youth, you've got experience and you've got durability and you know, you've got quality at the end of the day. And, you know, if Liverpool are going to be competing on multiple fronts, I think, you know, you can't have enough good players in certain positions. And we know kind of how much that centre-back issue, you know, you have to look at the other year, it kind of, you know, two out of the 11 players are missing, how detrimental that can be and kind of how big the drop-off can be. So I think Liverpool will probably always, you know, certainly under Jurgen Klopp will always be scarred by that, you know, January 2021, whenever it was. So yeah, I think, you know, I'd be definitely giving Matip another contract. I think Liverpool just probably have to just be smart with it. And, you know, any contracts they are kind of given to players over 30. I mean, we saw Henderson, I think he got a 4-year one last year, slash summer into Henderson, which,
yeah,
you know, even by Henderson standards, I think that took a few people by surprise. You know, Salah obviously got a 3-year one in the summer. So I think, you know, it might not be the long-term contracts that we're all used to, but, you know, as long as you're kind of giving them enough for the immediate future and then potential to sell them on with, you know, a bit of resale value, I think it's, you know, perfect business by Liverpool. I mean, I think Matip as well, especially given the kind of circumstances that he kind of arrived in, you know, as a free transfer from Schalke, you know, I think he kind of does go under the radar because I know he hasn't played as many games as he should have during those kind of 6 years, but it feels like it was only last year that he kind of got the recognition from the wider Premier League that he, you know, really did deserve, which, you know, kind of just, you know, we've all been saying that for the last kind of years, whenever he has played, he's quality. So, like I say, he's a brilliant centre-back and a brilliant footballer. And like I say, Liverpool should be doing everything they can to keep him beyond the summer of 2024.
Yeah, I think the key thing for me is all the extensions of Thiago and Matip is that Klopp's now got his extension until 2026. So I'm sure that Thiago and Matip will both sign that 2-year extension just to play out the rest of their Liverpool careers under Klopp, or the rest of their potential careers under Klopp looking likely. But that is all we've got time for today, unfortunately. A big thank you to Keith McDonald and Ed Kay for joining me on today's Agenda podcast. And of course, a huge thank you to all of you for listening and watching along. Be sure to subscribe to the Blood Red YouTube channel so you don't miss any of our Liverpool content, because we're going to keep you entertained across the international break, as well as keeping up with our podcasts in all your regular places. Well, thanks once again for your time and your company, and we'll catch you next time on the Agenda podcast.
You've been listening to the Agenda podcast on the Blood Red channel.